And welcome to the Toddcast. I am John. With me, as always, is Tim, or at least most of the time is Tim.
Tim the Time Cop.
And we're joined by a very special guest this week, Mr. Chris Anderson.
Hello, Chris. Hello.
Hey. Thank you for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So before we get into too many things, I just want to do some NDC housekeeping while we wait for people to hop on the stream. Every Saturday this summer, remember, you can go to the VFW in Elwood and get 25 cent books, just to get them out of our way. and I believe it's a long box for 70 bucks, I believe. So
yep,
check it out. August 4th and 5th. We're going to have Ron Friends coming in and doing a awesome Heroes Union signing. He'll be at the Pittsburgh Mills location from 12 to 3 on Wednesday the 4th, and then he'll be at Cranberry from 4 to 7. And then on the 5th, he will be at the Waterfront. Tim and I are going to try to snag him away from that toward the end of it if it's not busy to possibly hop on the show. So we may do it a little earlier so that we can get him in toward there and he doesn't have to run over in time. I'm going to try to talk to him ahead of time.
If you find out his favorite pizza topping, we'll put it on a slice with some string, and I will just drag it slowly across the floor.
Nope. It's just it's got to be a can of Diet Coke.
Okay, that's fine.
I can just pull that son of a bitch, and he'll just, like, come right around. And then that Saturday, the 7th, then, would be Butler's anniversary sale. Celebrating 20 years in Butler. We are now in downtown Butler, PA. Go check that out. Lots of stuff going on. And then 2 weeks after that is the return of Free Comic Book Day.
Finally.
So free comics, all the stores, lots of crazy. It'll be a lot of fun. And lastly, if anyone lives out by our Ohio Valley store, we are looking for a part-time person. You can go to our open interviews on this coming Wednesday from noon to 4 and bring your resume and sit down and watch Bo and I scare you. It'll be great.
If you can't really alphabetize, scary.
We're just
don't
both
apply.
Big dudes. We're just both big dudes, so we just come off scary. It's really not that bad, though.
Well, so we just want to go right into origin story for Chris. All right, Chris, so this is the section that we kind of origin story. This is just tell us about yourself, like whatever part you want to tell us. You can tell us from like when you were conceived or any part, wherever you want to start. Totally up to you. Origin story.
Well, I wasn't really there for that, so
okay.
You were born.
I guess I didn't think it. I said that wrong. I didn't even think about that. Conceived. No, not that. When you were born. But yes. This is going great.
All right. So like comics wise, I guess is probably stay on topic, huh?
We never do. So, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. So the thing that snagged me is like I was always one of those kids who drew all the time and never with any kind of focus, but when Tim Burton's Batman came out, you know, that, and then Tim Burton's Batman, and then a couple of years later, Rob Liefeld's X-Force were like this 1-2 punch that kind of made me go, well, I'm going to be drawing comic books for the rest of my life. I just kind of knew it in my bones that that's what I was going to do. And so my dad was, he was an older dad. He was like 50 when I was born, and he was a child of the Depression and stuff like that. And he was a big Spirit fan, and he loved The Shadow, and he loved, Terry and the Pirates and like all these, the old comic strips. He had that same sob story of like that every old timer has, that their mom threw away their first appearance of Superman and Batman. Mom threw him away. But, he was also kind of a very good artist, and he guided me through when he would look at my artwork that was inspired by, the early Image guys. he would look at it and say, God, that's just way too busy. It's just, there's too much going on. That's way too crazy. And so he sort of like directed me to get me to slow down and look at Will Eisner's work and look at all these other artists' work and you know, storytelling above all. And so I started going that way, going that direction. I was drawing like all the time throughout high school. I lived in Minnesota. So I went to the closest big convention was in Chicago. And I remember I went there probably like my junior or senior year of high school, showed off. I went there a couple times, but this one time in particular, I went there with some sample pages and even got like a tryout at Marvel. So I was like 17 or I don't think I was even 18 yet, maybe 16, 17 when I got a tryout at Marvel. They went bankrupt, I think, that year. So didn't get to go much further than that, unfortunately. Around that time, too, I was playing music. So I would draw all day and my hands would get tired. And so I'd sit down and like play the guitar and, you know, MTV was just on all the time and Aeon Flux and Liquid Television was on. And I thought, well, maybe I can turn this into animation. So when I went to college for a year in Minnesota. And then I decided I was going to move to California to go to school at Cal Arts. It was just what I was, you know, that was the only school I was going to go to. So I moved out here for a year and applied to Cal Arts, and I didn't end up getting in because they said that I was too happy of an artist. I wasn't angry enough. What the heck is that? Well, I'm angry enough now. So I just went ahead and I said, the heck with it. And I started my own animation company. So I had that for a year or two from like 98 to 2000, and did a lot of stuff for like BET. We animated the intro to Soul Train and a bunch of other shows on there. We did some stuff for Wu-Tang Clan and stuff like that. And then I found out really quick that I hated animation. Because we were like a very small boutique company and we were doing it all by hand. There were like five of us and we were all doing everything by hand. And at the time there was no, you know, I spent like all my college money on this thing that promised that this program that promised that it would fill in all the colors for all the cells, and it just didn't work and it was terrible. And I was like fed up and it was awful. I hated it. So I kept playing music out here. My best friend in high school was, he played Harvey on Sabrina the Teenage Witch. And we had like a Americana folk duo and we played a lot of music and stuff. So I just kind of focused on that afterwards and then got into teaching. And I didn't do much art for a while, and then even the music started to fall to the side. But about 8 years ago, maybe all of a sudden the bug came back to me. It's like, what are you doing? You're going to be a, remember when you told yourself when you were a kid that you were going to be a comic book artist, like this is what you're going to do? Well, you better like get to it, man. This isn't just going to happen. So I really got back into drawing comics. Tried to get better and better and better. That met a lot of people along the way. And eventually, about 2 years ago, I was able to quit teaching and became a full-time comic book artist.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
That sounds like a journey for sure. I mean,
it's definitely longer than that, but I abbreviated it as best as I could.
Well, now you've got some cool things going on. So let me just go through like this list that you kind of sent me. So the Kickstarter is for Chaotic Neutral, which we'll show some screenshots. If you have I sent John a couple.
Yeah, we're going to kickstart this next month.
All right. I read it today and it was fantastic. I thought the artwork was fantastic. I'm usually turned off by if it's a black and white book for some reason, but this one, like, it had the detail, it had cool images, it flowed really nice. The story was great. There was a giant Satan demon with a huge dong.
totally getting little Raina Bobbitt is.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So, yes. But I thought it was fantastic. You want to talk about that a little bit? Just the idea behind it?
Yeah, so I met Mark Sable, who wrote it a few years ago at Comic-Con after my book Lost Angels came out, and he really wanted to work with me, and so he laid this out. And the idea is that it's supposed to look like the original artwork from the original Dungeons and Dragons modules yeah. and manuals and stuff like that. So that's why we decided to keep it black and white with just some tones and stuff in it.
Yeah.
But it's sort of supposed to be more like the Dungeons and Dragons that your, you know, grandma thought that you were playing, you know, okay. during the Satanic Panic and stuff. You know, it's supposed to get dark and violent and gritty, and it's definitely not for kids. The idea behind it also is that Mark, besides being a really great comic book writer, also writes game modules. And yeah. so this will also be a game module. So it's going to be like nice. 72 pages. Yeah. I think it's like 48 pages of story or 52 pages of story. And then the rest is going to be a module with maps and, you know, everything. So we're just going for it. And hopefully this will be the first of, you know, a few issues that we'll get to produce if we play it all right.
Yeah, that's a really cool idea. Or the modules. I don't know too much about D&D. I never played, but so I didn't read through the modules. Are they kind of based off of like the story that I read, or is it something that's separate?
Yeah, it's actually what I sent you. It wasn't attached to it, so he's still in the middle of just finalizing it right now, and we're about to do a test run on it. We're kind of coming down to the wire before we launch this thing. But yeah, from what I understand, what he's told me about what he's got going on is it does kind of at least exist in the world of where our comic is set. Yeah. And then as you know, as games go, you can kind of take it in whatever direction you like from that yeah. starting point.
That's awesome. As
someone who has played D&D, I did get like a Fallen Empires like vibe to it. The bigger thing though with the art style that I took from it was it really had this like old heavy metal look, like heavy metal magazine that I was like, man, like if this would have been put out in chapters, you'd have found it right in there. Like it would have just been right in there and it would have fit perfectly.
Yeah. Heavy metal's another publication that I've done a lot of work for. So.
They're rubbing off on you.
Especially as of late, I've been in the last like few issues of Heavy Metal, so
it's awesome.
So yeah, I mean, I've drawn a lot of inspiration from that magazine, that particular publication.
Mm-hmm. I did like how it played out like a module though. Like, it also reminded me a little bit of like the late 80s D&D animated TV show that went like one season. Like it had some bit of that vibe without, you know, pulling completely from it. But I really enjoyed, I thought the art was just killer, man. Cause there's panels Thanks. Where you don't even have, there's no words. It's just art telling story. And I'm just like, man, awesome art. This is awesome.
If I'm doing my job right, you should be able to tell what's going on in the entire thing without words. But yeah, it was a lot of fun to draw. That's for sure.
That's one of the things I like about comics today. I mean, obviously we all love the classics, but as artists get better, they do things like what you just said. They can tell that story because the artwork is so good. You know, back in the day it was, you know, a classic Kirby picture, but then they had to put a ton of text because they didn't really convey all of that. Now you can get emotion and everything in the faces. So that's one of the things I love about modern comic books is you get that sense of storytelling just from the artwork. So
yeah I actually draw a lot of my stuff from the old timers, you know, like I said, like the old like Hal Foster and all the old EC artists and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know? And Toth, those are the master storytellers that, you know, I'm still learning from.
Was that kind of the inspiration for this one shot horror, any of that stuff? Or was
so one shot horror came about because David Ocampo and I, who wrote Lost Angels, we were in between, I think, volume one and volume two of Lost Angels. I think I only sent you volume one because that's the one that we have in print, but volume two is available on Comixology. And we were in between the two volumes, and I needed a breather. I needed something to draw besides, you know, sci-fi, like aliens with wings.
Yeah.
And so he came up with these like short spot color horror stories, and it wasn't necessarily the inspiration. In fact, for me, it wasn't at all, because I didn't even really get into the EC horror stuff until probably a year ago. And I started doing these like two or three years ago. So that was all instinct, honestly, from what I just felt like a horror story should feel like and look like and be paced like.
Yeah.
And Dave, you know, he always hands in a great script, and we always work really well together. There's four issues of the one shot horror things, and we kind of did them as like experiments on how to work together. We mean, we work together really well no matter what, but you know, one time he would give me a full script with the dialogue and with direction and everything in it. The next one he would just give me a summary, and the next one we would work like kind of Marvel method. And we would just play around with different ways to do stories and different ways to tell these things. It was a lot of fun.
That's cool. That's awesome. It sounds like you have like a lot of different inspirations coming, which is keeping it fresh for you. Because then as you get maybe like burned out on one thing, are ideas already churning when you're in the midst of one thing for the next thing? Or is it kind of just as you're taking a break in between?
Definitely. It's always working. I'm always trying to grow, and I'm always trying to get better. And in order to do that, you've got to try different things and see what works and what doesn't, you know, and just try to be the best cartoonist that I possibly can. But if I get locked into one system or one train of thought or one idea, I'm never going to grow. And the most important thing is that I get better.
Yeah.
I never will be, but I'm trying to be the best cartoonist that I possibly can be. You know,
well, that I think that's awesome. I mean, I think if you're a comic artist and a cartoonist, you're probably never feel like you're done, you know?
No, so, and you shouldn't get complacent, yeah. You know?
Well, they say to be a master at anything, you have to practice at it like a million hours?
Yeah,
so, something like that.
Yeah. When I was studying music, I felt the same way. I was like, fuck that. So do you find, well, two questions. One is, sure. What's your favorite genre to draw then? Is it like horror, high fantasy, sci-fi, whatever? And then do you find that when you cross over to that and do something else, you figure out a way to make the other thing better somehow ever?
Yeah, that's a really tough question to answer. I like
excellent.
Yeah, I don't know. I like all genres. I've become sort of the horror guy. I worked on Creepshow with Greg Nicotero on the comic and the show.
Nice.
And I think, and then with the one shot horror books too, and then other people started seeing my work and started coming to me to do horror stuff. So I've drawn horror a lot. I don't know that it's my favorite thing to draw, because I don't know. Every project is different. Even two horror books can be completely different, and it need to be treated differently. And it's about pacing, it's about tone and atmosphere. I'll bend my style a little bit depending on what the project is. So I don't necessarily have a favorite one. You know, if I had to draw like an automobile post-apocalypse thing, that would be a nightmare for me, because I hate drawing cars.
Yeah,
that's fair.
but other than that, storytelling is storytelling, and I mean, they each have to be treated a little bit differently, and And I'd like to think that I could do all of it. Okay. So I don't really have a favorite, to be honest.
Okay. What about the other part where, like, drawing horror helped with the high fantasy? Like, you were like, oh, man, this makes it easier because I knew I figured out a better way to do it while I was drawing this thing that I don't normally draw to draw something better.
Yeah, it definitely squeaks in. I can't really give you an example, but I know that my experience from one thing definitely carries on into the next.
Okay.
For sure.
So like, obviously we were like, well, you drew a giant demon dong, so you can take that from the high fantasy
right.
and go to like a zombie dong getting mutated,
right.
mutilated. And it would be like, hey, I already got this down. We got this.
Right. It's just slap some different texture on it and you're good to go.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, the one of the exciting things you told me was your Lost Angels is getting the Hollywood treatment. You're getting a show made out of this. Is it a show or a movie?
We're hoping it's a TV show. We're hoping to get it. We're hoping it's going to go there. It's chugging its way forward. So
yeah,
there's not a whole lot I can say about it, but it's looking pretty good.
Awesome. Are you getting a lot of input? Like, are they asking for your input on a lot of things?
Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot. But we'll see. Once it hits a certain stage, I think I'll be a little bit more involved in it. Right now, I'm just letting the people do their thing that need to do their thing. And, sacrifice
and whatever
I have to do.
That's got to be like a dream come true, being able to like create something. And then especially today, everything's, everybody's making stuff for streaming, for Netflix and everything.
Yeah.
So to have something that you guys created be picked up.
Well, I think that's why a good reason why we got picked up is because so many things are getting picked up. But I think the crazy part is that we didn't really have much distribution at all for Lost Angels. And I think it was me physically putting the book in like two stores here in Los Angeles. Somebody kind of just walked in and said, what's this? And, gave Dave a call and said, hey, we want to make this thing. And then it's awesome. Been going on for over a year now at this point, but progressing.
And it's on sale on your site? Like, you can get it?
It is. Yep. On my site, I have copies of it.
Digital or physical?
No, on my site, it's physical.
Awesome.
Here it is right here. It's a big thick sucker.
Wow.
So
it's huge.
Yeah, it's a good size one.
Well, I'm going to order one for myself, but I might have to get a
big city in
store. Oh, wow.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's – yeah. I think I have a lot of customers, I think, that would love that. So
great.
Yeah. So, anything else you want to talk about as far as like other projects? I don't want to.
What else have I got going on? So Lost Angels Volume 1 is a physical thing. Volume 2 is just digital. So that's on Comixology. We did it differently at that time. It was really short, like 12 page issues, just like the One Shot Horror. And the One Shot Horror is you can get physically through my site too. I've got the through my Patreon. I'm doing these these strange little Masters of the Universe like fan comics that I'm giving away as as gifts if you sign up to my Patreon. And then I've got also this like Masters of the Universe sketchbook that I've also got I give away, and for anybody who signs up to my Patreon, I just send them out right away. I'm going to be working on one more of those. I'm working on a Stinkor story. The last one was Mossman, so this one will be Stinkor.
Nice. I think the page that just held up, if I called it right, was Grizzlor and Scareglow. So
the one that you just held it was Grizzlor and it was like some ice guy. I can't remember.
Oh, I thought it was Scareglow.
No, he's like in there, though. Like he was Scareglow. He was Scareglow and Mossman.
Nice.
Nice.
That's awesome.
We were just geeking out over the Masters of the Universe Revelation number one that came out last week.
I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen anything that came out last week.
It's like the prequel to the sequel, but the sequel right. to the original.
Technically, it's a prequel to the original because it's...
Oh, is it a prequel to the original?
Okay, so the book's a prequel to the original, and the Netflix show is a sequel to the original show. So it's kind of like Star Trek Menace. Enterprise. It's a prequel to both the regular and the Calvin timeline. Like, you know, okay. But it was really good. Like, if you're into Master stuff, if this is any sign of what the show is going to be look like, you're going to love it. And cool. I think the show comes out what next month, right?
So. This month, I think, doesn't
this
it?
Month?
Maybe end of this month, maybe?
23rd, I think, of July.
There we go.
Well,
pretty yeah. quick. That My is, little story is I
next
I totally
Friday.
That is next Friday. Right, I don't follow any of the continuity or anything in my little things. I write them like I'm a kid playing with my action figures
with your toys.
And have no idea the origin of any of these characters, what they're supposed to be doing. I just know their names. In fact, I don't even say their names in it because I don't want to get in trouble, and that's why I don't sell them on my site, because I don't want to get in trouble. So I gift them.
Yeah.
If you sign up to my Patreon.
If I were to draw how I played with them, every story would end with a figure being smashed with a log. My dad used to, you know, cut trees. Yeah. We lived in the country, and we just had big log piles in the back. And it would always seem like the coolest setting, like, oh, welcome to, like, Wood Planet or something, you know? And you'd play on it, and then we would just smash them. So
the roots of trees made some really cool hideouts. Yeah. Me and my friend, we were little pyros, and we melted ours.
Nice.
They make a very weird sound as they drip. They go, pew, pew, pew.
Nice.
Things are,
mine always ended up, like, without like any armor, admit. Without any, like, anything. Yeah. It was just, like, shirtless dudes hanging up by the pool. Like,
yep.
Wow, we're all very defined here today.
And then there's Ram.
And then Ram Man just over there.
Yeah, the Ram Man's just like, come on, guys.
Just a little bit of sunscreen right here.
I want to take off my armor.
Right. Him my and Manny Faces. Weird. Manny Faces just keeps going, I'm not getting sunburned. I'm not getting sunburned.
So. Do you find time during the week or any time to keep up with current stuff? Or, you know, what are your interests as far as that goes?
I don't have any time. I'll read a little bit of stuff before I go to bed. But that's about all. Like I'm really weird. Like I thought that once I started doing this, I would have like a schedule where I'd wake up whenever the hell I wanted to. And I'd just work. And then I'd stay up until like, you know, 2, 3 AM and work and then go, you know, go to sleep. No. I get up at like 7 o'clock in the morning. Get right to work, and I stop working at like 6:30, eat dinner, watch something with my wife, crawl into bed and read for a little bit, and then get up and do it all again and like turn into this old dude real quick when I had to be responsible. And like, you know, if I don't make comics, then I'm not going to eat. So, you know, but yeah, like I find it hard to keep up with things. I've been reading the Beta Ray Bill as they've been coming out because Danny Warren Johnson's just like crushing it. And I read Ultra Mega, and that's about
Ultra Mega was a lot of fun.
You know, James Herron is just like such a good artist. Both of those guys, there's so much energy in them. That's what I like about these guys.
Yeah.
You know, and they're finally getting, you know, noticed a lot, which is good for me because I feel like my artwork has that kind of energy in it too, a lot of it.
Yeah,
at least the current stuff that I'm doing, and so it means that I could possibly get more work.
That was the first thing I noticed when I read Ultra Mega. I actually thought at first that it was Daniel Warren Johnson, because it's very similar, like you said, with the, it just has a lot of energy.
Yeah, and funny enough, it's the other way around, is that James Herron is who inspired Daniel Warren Johnson to start, you know, working professionally. So
I didn't know that. Yeah. Now you've told me something that I can float out next week when he's on the show, because we have him on, and I'll make it like I'll make it like I knew it all along.
Right?
Like, hey, I heard you. You know, I've known this for a while.
So, and I'm going to be like, he means like a week. He means like a week. So, no, that's awesome, man. Like, yeah, like, so if you want to give a shout out to your local shop, you can too. Like, we support all stores, not just our own.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm in Studio City, North Hollywood, California area. So my local shop is Collector's Paradise in North Hollywood. And they're pretty great.
Awesome. Something to look forward to when I head out there.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of good shops out here.
Nice. We're kind of lucky in that sense, too, in Western Pennsylvania that, you know, I mean, we have six of our own just in this chain, but we've got a good bit, and everybody's awesome. That's one of the great things about comics, is everybody just, we all love this stuff. So we're all, you know, friends and nice. And
there's a lot of camaraderie out here too. There's not good bin diving out here. That's the one thing.
Oh, you should come visit us then.
I understand.
Yeah,
hold on. I'm gonna see if I can find a picture. Give me a second,
please. While he's doing, maybe we'll get you out here for like a con or something. We started our own. We're doing a light one right now because we're trying to get some stuff finalized for our sixth. It'll be our sixth, right, John? This one coming up. Yeah. So, in between, because of COVID, we did like an outdoor one, and we just called it a light one, but we'll have to get you down here for, you know, one of our cons. It's not far to the store, and it's a Best Buy that's filled with dollar books.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bring an extra suitcase is what you're telling me, right?
Yeah. We have guys, there's a hotel across the street, and, some of the guys that are in the hotel, they work for like lecture company and different things. But they're from out of town, and they'll come over and they tell me they bring a suitcase just for that. You know?
Yeah.
So yeah.
I don't blame them.
That's my favorite thing as a collector to go through. I always whatever I can find, and then I fill in with back issues and stuff where I need to, but that's the way I kind of collect.
Right.
And I'm stalling for John to find a picture.
I know, I'm trying to find one. Give me like another few minutes. If I don't find it, then don't.
Another few minutes.
It's the minute. Come on, Tim. I know you can talk to people.
All right, I can do this. Let me pull out my inner Reege interview skills. I'm more of a Kathy Lee, actually. So no, I never liked Kathy Lee. So while we're doing that, do you want to break down, like, maybe for some people that don't know Patreon and what that is, just for some of the people watching, and maybe it'll give them an idea of, you know, why they should sign up for your Patreon, because it's an awesome platform.
Yeah, it is. It's hard to explain sometimes because people use it differently. But the way that I use it is while I'm working, I throw up pictures of my sketchbook and things that I'm ideas that are formulating as they're happening up onto my Patreon. And then if you pay, you know, a small amount a month or whatever, you can go in and take a look at like my process and how I'm developing and designing characters and laying out stories and things like that. And then I also throw up the final artwork that you can't see until that, you know, most of these things until that actually comes out if you aren't part of it. And also as part of it, some of the tiers, like I showed you, like once I'm done with some of these mini comics that I do as well, I just end up sending them out to all my patrons. So you actually get something physical in the mail every once in a while as well.
Awesome.
I will once in a while just sort of like gush about another artist and write a big long article about it and post it up on there. Another thing that you don't put in, I don't put anywhere else. Like I did one on a big one on Sergio Topi and like why I love his work. Cause a lot of people haven't even heard of him before. And I thought that it would be good, especially a lot of people that are online aren't even really comics people, oddly enough. And so it's fun to turn them on to other artists and writers and creators too. And I'll put up on videos of like time-lapse videos of my work and things like that. And it's all things that I don't put up on my other social media that I don't just give away for free. So you kind of, you know, and it's a way to connect a little closer with fans and, you know, people who are just interested in process and want to get, you know, unique things that they can't get anywhere else.
Here we go.
From me.
Found one. All right. Sorry. You ready? Ready to be, get your mind freaking blown? This is the basement at our Elwood City store during the last basement sale we did. We do this sale 3 times a year.
Whoa.
That's just the basement.
Yeah. Oh
my God.
And those are all alphabetized. Yeah.
Jeepers, creepers.
It's over 500,000 books and they're all sorted.
Wow, that's a project.
And that's alphabetized.
That's the thing that's most impressive to me every time I go down. And it also helps because then I can just go down with my list and go right to the spot that I want to.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
Yep.
I had
said, come on a dive. It'll be fine.
One of the guys watching, Ron, was asking about your routine when you create something. I'm not sure if you can dive into that process or if that's too vague or not.
Well, it's sort of my routine is like I have a very strict routine, actually. I get up in the morning, like I said. You know, I'll get up. I will make some tea and I will sit down and I will start working and, you know, have some breakfast and coffee and lunch and all that stuff, but, you know, not very long of a break until the end of the workday. And I don't wait for inspiration to hit. I treat it like a job, you know, this is the time that I'm working and I'm going to work until I'm done. So I plow through, you know, artists and writers block quite a bit that way. I haven't had a problem yet. So,
I mean, I
get things done, you know. I know a lot of people wait for that, you know, moment to hit them. And they're like, oh, I just don't feel like it today or whatever. And so they hit the, you know, the PlayStation. And that doesn't happen with me. I'm quick and I get stuff done.
Yeah, I think that's what you my schedule.
Your work schedule sounds like the old Jim Lee schedule. Like he would work like basically 8 hours straight through. He'd get up, start drawing, have lunch, keep drawing, have dinner, keep drawing, put his kids to bed because he has like 100 of them, and then draw some more, and then pass it.
Yeah. Yep. He lives down the street from me.
Oh, that's awesome. Really?
Yeah.
Can you count all of his kids from the window?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's one of the questions I ask people a lot when they come on, different artists and stuff. And I don't know why I ask it, because it makes me feel like the laziest person alive. Like, I'm like, oh, okay, well, I played PlayStation from I got up at 6:30 a.m. I wanted to beat that game. So I approach my all the leisurely stuff that I do in my life the way you approach work, and I should probably reverse that a little bit.
I have LA rent, so
okay,
like it's do this or live in a box. Yeah, yeah. So,
I mean, I'm not. It's right. that's not a bad thing to have. Is a
good terror is a hell of a motivator.
Yeah.
Don't doubt that at all. Don't doubt
that. Well, typically now we usually go through and talk about a couple of the books that we liked that came out this week. You're free to stick around if you want while we talk about these.
Yeah, I'd love to hear about them.
Okay. Awesome. We don't usually go in too deep. I try not to spoil anything, but some of the books that come out, I like to point out to people.
I'm now going to forever reference the fact that you said you don't go too deep, especially next time I'm around your wife.
Okay. You're fired. Going
to be hilarious. Wait a minute. That's not how this works. I'm going to make you go first then this week.
Damn it. Okay. You did Sinister War. Sinister
War. I'm doing it in the order that you sent them to me, so.
Oh, did I send you? Okay, I thought I sent you Mouse Guard first. That's fine. Sinister War, number one by Nick Spencer. As I'm not into this Nick Spencer run at all. I haven't been. I'm not into Nick Spencer. I keep reading it because I got my buddy Carl back into comics. So he's reading it. So out of guilt, I have to keep reading Spider-Man. And I only have 4 more issues of Spider-Man till Nick Spencer's done, and I can move on to something else. But this wasn't that bad. It was a story that, as you can see with this first image, that's kind of out of the One More Day storyline that Joe Quesada did, where to save Aunt May, he made a deal with Mephisto. And this is kind of the fallout of that. Every time Peter tries to get with Mary Jane, propose to her so they can get married and be together again, Mephisto is inserting himself somehow and blocking them. And the latest way that he's doing it is by having the Sinister Six go after him. And at the same time, the Savage Six. Who are also motivated by Kindred, which was Harry Osborn in a previous storyline that Nick Spencer did. So I kind of like the idea of these two Savage Six, Sinister Six teaming up to make the dynamic dozen, whatever you want to call them. But the star of the whole issue is just Mark Bagley still drawing Spider-Man and still drawing it just like a badass. I love his artwork. It helps the story flow. It helps make it fun. It makes you feel like you're a kid again, but also with some new stuff. So this first issue was pretty good. I enjoyed it. And maybe Nick Spencer's going to go out on a high note. It'd be great if he did that, because couple of the events that he did kind of fell flat for me. So I'm hoping that this goes somewhere really cool. I think I sent you another screenshot with Mysterio and then the Sinister Six. This issue takes place with Peter and Mary Jane at the world premiere of a movie that Mary Jane is in. And the director is Mysterio.
That's yeah. Hilarious.
Am I counting wrong here?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You're
okay. So no. So there's 5. I'm sorry. So there's 5 there, and they want Mysterio to be the 6th. They're attacking Spider-Man. Mysterio happens to be there because he was the director of the movie, and they're like, "Hey, there you are. We want you back. Like, we want you to join the group and get the band back together." So
we're sort of frightful kinda fiving, but we really want you to be part of the Sinister Six. Come on, buddy. Yeah.
Like I really want like a name for that, like the Dynamic Dozen or something like that. I really want them to have some kind of a
Diabolic Dozen.
Yeah, something. The Deadly Dozen.
The Bad Baker's Dozen. The Baker's Bad. I don't know.
But Overall, I would say if you're reading Spider-Man and you're enjoying it, I would pick this one up because I'm not enjoying Spider-Man that much, and I enjoyed this book. I thought it was pretty fun. So
nice. All right, my first book is Beyond the Breach. This is an Aftershock book. It's kind of interesting. It starts off with this woman who's mad at her boyfriend for sleeping with her sister while she was taking care of her mom who was dying. So she heads into what looks kind of be like a national forest. And all of a sudden, like, these giant crazy mutant creatures start attacking. And she saves a kid. They get trapped in a bathroom with this weird, like, kind of sloth looking dude that you kind of see him on the cover there. And it's kind of got like a, like that moment of like almost like Walking Dead where you're kind of like, shit, stuff's going down. Like, I don't know what we're going to do about this. And then they all of a sudden they start hearing their relatives' voices outside. And here it ends up being this giant monster that tries to eat the kid. It was pretty good. I really like everything that Aftershock's been kicking back out since their return. They just keep getting better and better. It has an art style similar to that was in Once in Future, which was a really great book as well. But the other cool part about this book was at the backer, there was a preview for Rainbow Bridge, which is part of their Seismic Press, which is their young adult readers. And this, it's about like a dog that died, and the dog is in dog heaven, and he finds a bag, and he's like, oh, so many balls are in here, and I can roll in socks, and there's a giant bone. And then he tries to paw a ball, and his paw goes through it, and he's like, this is weird. And where's Andy? Like, and it's just like all of a sudden it just twistly, heart-wrenchingly grabs you. And it's only like four pages of preview.
Oh, wow.
I really, really enjoyed that as well. But check those out. A lot of good stuff hitting your shelves this week. And we're going to talk about your next one. Bam!
I'll keep this one short because it's short. It's a three short stories inside. Fair. Mouse Guard. Love Mouse Guard. If you've never read Mouse Guard, you should read Mouse Guard. It's kind of on par with Scorriers, but Scorriers has a more realistic art style and has a modern setting. This is more of like a fantasy adventure kind of thing, but there's plenty of stuff to read from the old Mouse Guard. They did Black Axe, Winter 1152 and Fall 1152, and they haven't been, I haven't seen anything from Mouse Guard in years. Right. So when I saw this on FOC, I was like, holy shit, I'm so excited. It was great. It was three short stories. The first, each one of them had a theme. So the first one was Compassion. It was about an owl who had a mouse that cared for the owl, kind of like a servant, until the mouse fell sick and the owl cared for the mouse until it died. And it was a whole story about compassion. The second one was kind of an understanding storyline. It's all about the different animals that this mouse could understand that the other ones could not. And then the third one was kind of like a cautionary tale of just because you can go do something doesn't always mean you should, that, you know, kind of like a play it safe kind of thing. It was fun. I liked this take on Mouse Guard doing, you know, these short little tales, and I wouldn't be opposed to them doing more of these. I thought they were good. They had a lesson behind them. As somebody who grew up, you know, in the 80s and you watched all those shows like Full House and Family Matters and stuff, like, I'm used to things that, like, I like having that little lesson kind of nested in there as well. So overall, I know I just made a connection from Full House to Mouse Guard, so I don't think that will ever be done again.
That's one to grow on.
Yeah, right. So
I mean, GI Joe also had that too. So and he, so
the artwork in it's fantastic as always. So this is definitely check it out. I think the reason that people probably don't is it's that that odd size, and comic collectors can be very picky. Oh, I don't have a box for that. I don't know where I'm going to put that at, you know, but definitely get it. It's worth a read for sure. So,
oh, speaking of boxes real quick. All the stores this week got a shipment of a company called Pneuma, N-O-O-M-A-A, boxes. They are thicker and more durable than any individual cardboard box I have seen in my life. In fact, a customer asked me how durable it was, and I explained to them that I stood on a short box with nothing in it for over a half hour and the box didn't waver. And I'm 260. And I then proceeded to set one of the short boxes down and stand on it while telling him the story. And he was like, I'll check it out. He bought the short box. And then like 3 hours later, came back and bought two more. So definitely check them out. This is basically a test supply. They are a little pricier than the regular stuff we carry, but they are well worth it to protect your stuff. All right.
Yeah, they double as stools then.
Oh, right.
then it's.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can use them as like a bench if you get two of them. Like, yeah. So, my second book is Spare Parts from Behemoth. I did not realize that this was actually a movie. And it is, I just thought the idea of this like all girl punk rock band who was like kind of like beating people up in a bar, that I thought that was just awesome. And then it turns out that the guy that comes to buy merch from them at the end of the night, they think he's kind of a creeper. Here he ends up running them off the road on their way to the next gig, and they get kidnapped and taken to what I can only describe as the Thunderdome. And they get parts of their arms get cut off. Like each one gets part of an arm cut off, basically like the forearm up. Yeah. And then they get like cool, as you can see them on there, like they get cool.
Is that a hedge trimmer?
That is definitely a hedge trimmer. Yes. It's a hedge trimmer, a hammer, an axe, and I think the other one's like a drill.
I've always used my hedge trimmer.
Right? I actually need to buy one. I just realized that the other day looking at my hedges out front. They're pretty out of control. But at the end of the book, there's a poster for the movie. And I'm like, I'm just curious to see if this is real, you know? Yeah. So, you know, because sometimes like dudes like Rob Zombie will put stuff like that in there and the movie won't actually be real. So I Google searched it and I found the trailer and it came out last year. And then I was like, I wonder if I can watch this. I can totally watch it on Amazon for $4. So I might do that tonight.
Awesome.
So, but those are your comics this week. We have a few minutes. We want to talk about Loki real quick.
Yeah, we can talk about Loki.
All right. Finale. So, finale. So, people who don't want spoilers haven't watched it. First off, why are you so late? Secondly, turn it off right now. Come back to it and to listen to what we have to say after you watch it.
Yeah, what's your deal? It came out 2 days ago.
I know. What? Come on. I immediately woke up, made coffee, and sat there and watched it before I did anything. My wife.
That's because we work in a comic shop and we have to.
It's true.
So,
So this
episode kind of bummed me out a little bit.
Me too.
It had mid-season vibes and not finale vibes. And then I read something online that eased my mind a little bit. It was the mid-season. They filmed all 12 episodes at once. And this is technically the mid-season, and next season will be the next six. That wasn't something that they had told everybody originally. So when you're going into this thinking this is the season finale, it's not really the season finale. So, I mean, there was a lot of good stuff in this episode, but there was a lot of explaining too. And I think that's what kind of brought it down a little bit, was that there was just a lot of explaining of this is how time is going to work now, and how the branches and everything are going to work. And I feel like it just kind of dragged it down a little bit. But a lot of cool stuff from Loki, Eliath, finding out about Eliath and, you know, his whole story was awesome. I think episode 5 was probably the best of the 6.
Agreed.
This one's not bad. It's just not as good as 5, but it's probably pretty close. And I give like 5 a 9. This would be like an 8 to me. So, yeah.
I'd probably give it like a 7. But I enjoyed the character that appears in this episode. Which I will not say for those people who still didn't watch it and don't want spoilers, even though you're still listening. Why are you still listening?
Because I'm a guest.
But I really liked everything with that, because it was very deep. Like, it went real deep into some stuff. I liked his outfit. I liked the fact that they didn't actually name him. Yeah. I'm really sad that it was not the Beyonder. Like,
yeah, he kind of gave out the nicknames to give you a little hints. You know, he's like,
yeah.
So,
but if you look up the version of him that begins with an I, he looks pretty much spot on, minus a helmet. Like,
yeah,
yeah.
And I think the thing that that threw me off about it too was that, this character is more ruthless in the comics, and we kind of got like this funny, goofy, you know, Willy Wonka kind of version of this character, and that threw me off a little bit. But after listening to him explain that, you know, there's all these different versions of himself, and knowing that this one is now not with us, I think it's almost like a setup. Hey, we're going to just like kind of lull you in, like, oh, this is how this character is. He's goofy, he's silly. And then you're going to get the badass. At least I hope, because Marvel in their movies has screwed up a couple big name villains before. And I'm really hoping that that's not the path that they're going down. So
I think we're going to get that extreme flip side, cruel version of him, only because of the, what I like to refer to as the Back to the Future ending that it had.
Yeah.
Because he, like, you know, he goes back to this place, he sees these people, and they're like, who the fuck are you? And he's like, what do you mean? And then he looks, and one of the giant statues is no longer one other thing, one thing, it's now a different thing.
I'm gonna say it.
Okay.
Is Chris, are you cool with this?
I'm fine. Gonna
say who it was.
Go for it.
It was Kang. It was freaking Kang.
Technically, Kang, this version would be closer to Immortus.
Yes. But
but they're all the same person.
Yeah. But that's an actual thing that happened in the comics, is, you know, when he time traveled, every time he time travels, it creates another version of Kang. So that's similar to what's happened in the comic books, all these different branches. And you see Loki get kicked through back to the TVA, but Owen Wilson doesn't recognize him. And you're just kind of like, what's going on? And then you see the different version of Kang in the statue with the classic, you know, outfit without the headdress, but the classic, you know, collar and down the middle. So I thought it was a really slick way to introduce him. It's just, at first it threw me off. Of how he acted. And I think that was one of the things that I couldn't get past right away. It's been a couple days, so I'm not as sour on it. So,
well, the other good part about this is now officially we have our first member of the bloodline of the Fantastic Four in the MCU.
Yeah.
So now we definitely have to have them exist.
I mean, do we? It's Marvel. You know what I mean? Do they, is he, because he never said his name. you know? So that's the thing. True. They could just change it up. They could go Mandarin on us, you know?
Oh, please no.
Yeah.
Please no.
That's my fear. That's what I'm worried about.
I love
about.
Ben Kingsley, like, oh, but no.
Yeah. So.
I actually like that movie quite a bit, except for that part. I thought that scene was hilarious, but that part, it threw me down because I'm a big Mandarin fan. Like, I want Mandarin and MODOK to be like buddied up, doing terrible shit that's stupid, like Skeletor style. Like, that's what I want. Like I want it from like the Iron Man cartoon show that was basically Forceworks. That's what I want. So
yeah.
So
overall, I mean, I'm excited. Yeah, I'm excited to see what's going to happen. Obviously, this is going to play out. The multiverse part of it will play out more so in the Doctor Strange and Spider-Man movie. Kang probably will be taking a back seat until at least Quantumania, I would think.
Yeah, probably.
So,
but either way,
if you haven't watched it, guys, check it out. It was good. Yep. So,
yep. So, I think it was my second favorite. I think WandaVision was still better, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then,
because WandaVision's finale, even though it set up, you know, some stuff with this multiverse, WandaVision was 10 or 12 episodes, and that finale felt like, you know, a wrap up of everything that happened. Where now, learning that, you know, Disney split this 12 episodes up into two seasons, it makes a little sense why that episode didn't quite feel like a finale and didn't really wrap anything up. But it's also setting up the phase four villain, the phase four, this is going to be, this phase is Thanos. So
it kind of felt like, and this is, somebody's going to hit me for this, it felt like a CW finale, like season finale. Cause like, especially the Flash. Cause like at the end, cause I just caught up on Flash today. I caught up on most of Legends. But the season finales of everything that they've done has always like actually led into the next set, the next season. Whether it's like a character appearance or whatever, that's you, that's what's going on. And that's kind of how I think it felt. Also, if you haven't watched Flash this season, about halfway through, the Godspeed War starts, and it's really, really good from there out. I think they only have like two episodes left in this season. And I will say Impulse is brilliant and spot on.
Can't. Oh my God. I can't with that costume. I can't.
But it's the costume from the comic. He even does like the stupid foot kick thing. And like,
I don't know why, but he, so good. He looks silly in it.
I am going to, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try to get Wayne Fauscher on this show and have him talk to us about Impulse and if he likes the show or not. But I'll have to make him watch the show first so they can tell me if he liked it.
Yeah.
But I thought he was spot on, man. I was like, holy crap. Like this was way better than I expected it to be. So, but.
Well, Chris, I put up a link to your stuff. Everybody said that the Patreon link is on your website. Apparently. So they have the link.
It's on my store site too. Yep.
Yeah. So, cool. You know, I will be signing up for sure. I appreciate you answering my random tweet because I just kind of put this tweet out. I'm like, who wants to be on the show? And you were the first person that answered. So
my good friend Perry Crow, he was on your show, I think.
Oh, okay.
Right? And he told me to get a hold of you guys because he said the interview was great and I should hop on it. And I said, all right, I'm going to do it. We did a heavy metal story together. It came out like 2 months ago, last month.
Oh, awesome.
All comes back to heavy metal. All
right. He was a lot of fun. He has that Stud and the Bloodblade that's coming out soon.
Stud and the Bloodblade. Yep.
And it's
super cool book. Yeah.
We had some good He-Man talks on that episode too.
Yes.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Very He-Man-esque. But yeah, I appreciate you coming on and you're welcome back anytime. Yeah. Anytime you have a project, anytime you're just bored and which, you know, you're busy, so probably not, but anytime you
Sometimes
want
to. Sometimes
you
just need to talk to humans, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I told my wife I was human.
What? Lies.
So, but no, yeah, I really appreciate it. You know, you're always welcome to come down for a con. You're welcome in the NDC family anytime. So we really appreciate
thanks,
it,
guys.
Yeah,
hey, man, thank you. I really appreciate the, east it side. Too, yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely, 100%.
Cool. Well, thank you for so much again for coming on the show and being an awesome guest. And good luck with the Kickstarter.
Thank you.
Yeah. We'll
close it up and then say goodbye off screen.
Cool. Just a reminder for everybody, next week, Daniel Warren Johnson.
Yeah.
That's going to be good. Nice. We'll also have a very special guest, Tim Hibbert.
Yes.
the other Tim from Waterfront. So it's going to be very hard for me to, like, I'm going to have to remember to yell at them via their last name. And most of it's going to be Hibbert, stop talking. Because he's a
big Daniel Warren Johnson fan. So when he's one of the my co-managers,
everybody should be.
Store.
And
he wants to tell him this story that Kevin Smith came to our store one time, and he said, "I want a book to read," and Tim said, "Hey, you should check out Murder Falcon," and Kevin Smith bought it. So he's really excited to be like, hey, I got Kevin Smith to buy your book. So
that's awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, but and, all right. Well,
Tim likes to talk a lot.
Yeah. So. He talks a lot.
Yeah.
So,
well, on a talk show, it's helpful.
It's helpful.
That's true. That is true. Sometimes. Yeah.
I like to let you guys talk.
Yeah.
So. That's but, what we're here for you guys. So we're just here to review comics. You're here to pitch everything else.
So. Yeah. So, all right. Well, yeah, thanks a lot, Chris. And we'll see everybody next week at 8 p.m. 8 p.m. for next week.
Okay. See you guys.
Peace.
Late.